I don't have to be, you know, part of the community to support. I don't need to be black to support Black Lives Matter, you know? I don't need to be a woman to support women's rights, you know? We just need to be human. The real fight is not with guns, it's just with ideas. New ideas that people can one day, hopefully, accept people just for who they are, no matter what their background or ethnicity or religion or sexual orientation or gender identity.
Welcome back to Asylum Speakers. I'm your host, Jazz O'Hara, and together with some very special guests, we'll be taking you on a journey across the world without you having to go anywhere. We're here to amplify voices, to educate, inspire, and debunk some of the common myths and misconceptions around migration today. So join us as we transcend borders, nationalities, religions, and languages to hear from the people with which we share this world, celebrating our differences and recognizing what unites us. Listen out for yourself in the words of each guest, because at the end of the day, we're all human and always able to find common ground should we choose to. This episode is brought to you by Skin and Me, a personalized skincare solution that has not only transformed my skin, but also my packing experience wherever I'm going. Skin and Me's tailored treatment is designed specifically to meet your personal skin concerns, from acne to pigmentation to signs of aging and more. You have an online consultation, you send some pictures of your skin, and you get your treatment made to order, shipped directly to you in a monthly daily doser. The Daily Doser dispenses exactly how much cream you need each day, meaning no wasted product, you never run out, and it even has your name inscribed in it. I've personally used the product for the last few months, and I've seen a significant difference in my skin since doing so, and it's now the only product that I take with me when I travel. The best part is that it's normally $24.99 per month, but you can get your first month for just £3.50 with the code ASYLUMSPEAKERS, all in one word and all capitals, for an over 85% discount on your first month. In today's episode, we're exploring what it's like to be displaced and part of the LGBTQ+ community. This episode is dedicated to everyone who sits at this intersection and faces not only the challenges of being an asylum seeker or a refugee, but also the discrimination that comes with their sexuality or gender identity. We will hear from three people today: a new friend of mine, Hiba, the first openly trans filmmaker in Pakistan, who is now living in London and seeking asylum in the UK. My other two guests today I'll be keeping anonymous. One of them, we'll call him A, runs a shelter for LGBTQ+ refugees from all over the world in Istanbul, where he lives as a refugee himself from Iraq. But first, let's hear from my lovely friend M. You might remember him from a previous episode recorded at his home in Beirut. He's Syrian, and he lives as a refugee in Lebanon with his boyfriend, where he told me this very painful but powerful story about what happened to them. It felt like an important place to begin this episode.
An incident happened with me that pushed me to the point that I need to call UNHCR. I was in my room, in my living room, alone with my boyfriend. And I didn't notice that the window was open, and I live in a crowded area. So like buildings that sit up to next to each other that people can see through my window, everything. I didn't notice that was open, and I started kissing him, and we started hugging each other, and then I heard the door was knocking. I opened the door, and he was my neighbor. I'm like, what's wrong? What's the problem? And they were like, can we talk to someone responsible in this house? I'm like, this is me. I'm the one who's responsible. He started raiding and shouting, like, how could you? You are a slut. I'm sorry about the bad words.
Tell you're saying what he said, you know?
Yeah, this is what he said. You're doing something like prostitution in this house. We don't like this. I'm like, what did I do? They're like, we have filmed you from the window kissing that person. And this is not only illegal, you're doing something illegal to the religion. I'm like, please just hold on. I don't know what you're talking about. I was lying, actually, because, you know, being gay in such a community is like a crime. So I was trying as much as I can to absorb his anger. But apparently, like, while I was talking to him, all the building neighbors, like, in each floor, we have 13th floor. Each floor, we have 4 houses. Mm-hmm. Imagine there was a man from each house in front of my house door. Mm-hmm. They were, like, shouting at me, get out of this area. We will kill you. We will throw you from the balcony. And they were, like, invading my house and pushing me until I reached the balcony. And that time, actually, I felt that I just want the floor to collapse. I just want to be buried. At that moment, I wasn't listening to anyone. I was like deaf. All I was thinking about is that I'm exposed now and I'm in danger. I was trying to speak, but the words wasn't coming out of my throat. I don't know what happened. There was no sound, you know, no voice coming out. My boyfriend was inside. I was having that thoughts like, are they going to do something to me? Because the neighbor that living right next, right under me, under my apartment, was like, I'm going to throw you. And you with all of that behaviors, gay behaviors, because we don't accept that. God doesn't accept that. I'm like, I didn't do anything, but they were like, we had pictures of you, we had videos, and you will be killed, you will be imprisoned. I'm like, just hold on, please. I'm not doing anything. And they were like shouting and shouting and shouting until I was like, please just stop. I'll do whatever you want, just stop. Then they left, and I'm like in the trauma now, you know? I literally felt it was the mid of summer, the highest levels of summer. But at that moment, believe me, Jazz, I felt like the most coldest moment ever I would feel. Like, my body's cold, everything is feel weird. I don't know how to express this feeling. I just want to run away. You know, I just want to die at that moment. I slept that night because I didn't want to think about anything. I slept and I was thinking, please God, don't wake me up. At that moment, I really thought about this. The next day, I didn't know what to do. I came here and all the thing I was thinking about is just changing my house. I need to change the house. I need to put myself away from this stressing area, because when I went out of the house, they were like looking at me and like, you're a sin. You're not a human being. You're not even equal to our dogs, you know? You're someone like should be killed. I'm so sorry that I've given you some details, but this is what I've lived, and I think this is what you want to hear.
Definitely.
I had to change my number. I had to change my clothes. I had to leave immediately. I left everything at that house. I left all the furniture. I left everything. And then the landlord was like, I'm not giving you everything. I'm like, I need my stuff. I need my personal stuff, just like papers and things. But the protection plan was like to disappear from this world, disappear from my sponsor who's given me the residency permit for a year, and disappear from my family because they might know this and I might be in danger. So in one night, my life changed. Immediately, I'm a prisoner. Even though I'm not in a prison, I'm a prisoner because I can't go out. I can't be exposed to anyone because they might know someone in my area and they might get me. I had to do that. That's the only thing I had to do. For like 5 to 6 months, honestly, I faced all the types of depression. I started taking antidepressants and it was affecting me physically. I couldn't sleep. What was that impression like?
Grinding your teeth.
Yeah, I was grinding my teeth all the time because of those medications. I wasn't having such a good sleep. Like, I'm always thinking about what would happen. You can't imagine how hard that time was. You know, the situation kept deteriorating and I'm hiding and keeping myself away from people. And then I had a call from the UNHCR telling me that my case has been submitted to the resettlement department. So if I accept this, that means I might travel. They might resettle me in a different country that understands my right and that protects my right. That's where you have to rethink about everything you did in this area, in this country, and all the hopes and all the dreams that you've been building. It won't be happening because you're going to be resettled in a different country. And it's just because you're not straight, unfortunately. But you're still human, but you're not like them. You're not like the traditions that they follow. So here is me now waiting for a call, let's say, but not from God, from a person who works in an embassy that will save my life. And I'm so sad because why I have to wait for a person to save my happiness? Why I can't make my happiness? Why the people in my country can make me happy just because I want to sleep with the person that I want to?
You just want to be with the person that you want to be with and be able to be a full expression of yourself, right?
Exactly. This is what I believe in, but what they say, I'm just giving you their perspective.
Mm-hmm. And does that mean that you're also not in touch with your family? I mean, what about like...
Well, it's been like, I'm not fully not in touch. I'm in touch with my brothers who are connected to my family.
What about your parents?
They didn't know till now. Sorry. My brother always tells me that he wants to get me back. So me getting back, that means there's something wrong.
Okay. Because you mean he wants to heal you or something?
Yeah, exactly. Like with Quran, with religion, with something, I don't know. And mom before always used to tell a story about, you know, gay people who have been treated by Quran and religion and therapists, which is I don't believe in at all.
No, of course not. Your mom used to tell those stories, did you say?
Yeah, when we were kids, like as every normal mom in such a community, like conservative community like this, unfortunately.
And you're not in contact with your parents now since the incident?
Very, very, maybe three times, that's it.
It sounds like you're living with a lot of fear right now.
Honestly.
So moving forward, how do you feel about this resettlement plan? Is that something that you want or what do you really want?
Actually, what I want is to be away from here.
Would you be able to go together with your boyfriend?
Well, the thing is that before, I think 2019, people were able to get their boyfriends with them in the resettlement process. But after 2019, something happened in the UNHCR that, especially in LGBTIQ community cases, UNHCR decided to not get couples. So I'm the only one who's being deported, hopefully. There's nothing submitted yet. Yeah. My file is still in the process of resettlement. So I'm waiting. And my boyfriend might follow me, or if I'm able to sponsor him later on in a host country that I'm going to.
That was my lovely friend M. Next, we'll hear from someone else I'll keep anonymous. We'll call him A in this episode. A runs a shelter for LGBTQ+ refugees from all over the world in Istanbul, where he lives as a refugee himself from Iraq.
I'm half Iraqi, half Palestinian. So my grandparents were refugees from Palestine from 1948. And my parents and I are also refugees in Turkey.
I met A in a bustling cafe in central Istanbul, and we chatted over a Turkish breakfast. He began by taking me back to his life in Iraq to explain how he had found himself doing this work supporting LGBTQ plus refugees and why it is so important to him.
And I didn't like my society views on a lot of topics like women, sex, religion, LGBT issues. I would speak out. Since I was maybe 12, 13, I would challenge the religion teacher. So I got into also a lot like bullying, harassment, but that turned into threats and fights and got to a point where some men came while I was walking in the same street where my school was, and they were like, "We're going to come take you from inside your school if you talk like this again. We heard that you speak about these things, and are you trying to spread a new ideology or whatever?" So I stopped going to school, and we were waiting from 2003 like for things to get better, but things were not getting better, and so we decided to leave altogether and came to Turkey. And I've been here for 11 years now as a refugee. At that time, I didn't want to stay anywhere in the Middle East because I felt like no matter where I go, they're not gonna accept. And I wanted somewhere where I feel like that I can speak my mind and that would be okay. I'm an activist. What I'm fighting is for human rights for everyone, and I'm trying to raise awareness about groups that are discriminating against, like LGBT people. I have a empathy with any minority group because I know what it's like to be a minority or to be different. You don't have to be a minority. You can just be different, and people wouldn't like you, you know, for who you are. I am fighting those extremists. I realized that the real fight is not with guns, it's just with ideas. New ideas that people can one day hopefully accept people just for who they are, no matter what their background or ethnicity or religion or sexual orientation or gender identity.
M went on to explain what he is doing in Turkey.
I'm working on supporting the LGBT refugees in Turkey. And I've been doing that for 5 years with shelter, food, housing, medicine, other needs. We do psychosocial support meetings, workshops. I think the most important thing that we were doing without realizing we were doing it in the beginning, that we were building a sense of community and belonging to people to feel accepted, to feel like they are there with people like them who accept them for who they are, and they can act and behave freely without getting judged or without getting attacked. And many people told us that that was the first time that they felt that sense of belonging, that sense of safety. And so we had a shelter from 2017 to 2019. We would house 20 people at a time. We work with Syrian, Iraqi, Iranian, Afghans, Tunisia, Morocco, Palestine, Egypt. We also have supported people from Russia and Moldova.
It's really wonderful.
But yeah, I would say the most numbers are Syrian.
And what are some of the challenges that they are facing here in Turkey that you are kind of helping to overcome?
It's a very difficult reality, to be honest, because you have a lot of discrimination when it comes to housing and renting a place, specifically if you are a LGBT person. Since I've been here, like since 2011, it's at its worst level, and it's mainly because of political reasons and the economy.
M explained that he also worked on evacuations of people from unsafe countries.
Had some success stories. We've had two people make it to the UK, and so we just had another success. We've had people. We linked them to a German group, and they are now in Germany.
I asked M how his family felt about his work.
So my mom is a Muslim, but she she's a human and she empathizes with everyone and she supports my work. My dad is an atheist, but he still helps me translate some things about when I want to write about LGBT rights, which I think is beautiful. But he doesn't, you know, think that homosexuality is normal. He thinks it's something that's a sickness or something like that. But I remember I had arguments with him when I was in Iraq, even like before I came to Turkey. I would tell him what I thought, you know. He would ask me, so why do you, is this issue important to you? People think always that I'm gay because of the work I do, but, you know, I'm a straight, cis, gender man. But I think because of that, I have an obligation, I have responsibility, because it's people like me who are often the problem. It's straight guys who are often the perpetrators. And so I just don't like injustice. When I see injustice, I need to do something about it. I'm just not going to read about it in a magazine and go on my daily life and just ignore what's happening. It's not who I am. You know, when there is a problem, you need to do something about it. I don't have to be, you know, part of the community to support, like, you know, I don't need to be black to support Black Lives Matter, you know? I don't need to be a woman to support women's rights, you know? Like, we just need to be human. One thing I would like to do is to speak about this the idea of privilege and how we, as human beings, we're all born with a certain amount of luck or lack of, you know? If you are born a straight white man or woman in a place like the UK, like Bristol or Brighton or New York or Toronto, you know, you're going to have a different experience than a transgender person who was born in Syria or Afghanistan. It's all because of luck. It's nothing that you had control over. And it's not fair to me that there are millions of people who are suffering just because of their luck, just because of who they are or where they are born. And so it is up to us, those who have privilege, you know. I'm a refugee. I'm a brown Iraqi refugee. Not a lot of privilege, someone would think, but I actually do have a lot of privilege as a straight cisgender man who also grew up in a household where my parents are educated. That alone by itself is a privilege. My father took me from a poor neighborhood where my grandparents lived, took me to a better neighborhood. That have contributed a lot to who I am. And he put me in good schools, and I was a good student, and I went to one of the best schools in Iraq. And that have contributed to who I am. So if I just stayed in that neighborhood, if my father did not make that decision, I would have been a different person. And so it's these things that you had no control over does determine a lot of things in your life and the quality of your life and the people you hang out with. And so I see that I have privilege, even though I'm a refugee in Turkey, and I think I should use them to serve those who are less lucky. And if an Iraqi brown refugee can do it, anyone can do it, you know. If people in the West, you know, I feel like everyone, I mean, should do something, you know. We should not sit on the sidelines and it was not the voice of my enemies, but it was the silence of my friends. Or, you know, it's like when people when people are neutral, they are siding with
the oppressor.
Yeah, because they're not doing anything. And I feel like everyone should do something, even if they are busy. It's good to have personal goals, but you have to do something that is part of the solution. I feel like that is one of my main missions is I want to show people that this is the way that, you know, people should be living their lives, you know, to try to be part of the solution. You're doing that, and that's wonderful. That's amazing. You're using your privilege to give voice to those who are unlucky to be born in a certain place, and that's exactly what we should be doing. I wasn't always that person, you know, like I was that refugee who needed help before, you know. So something in me changed, because I always saw myself as that, you know, victim of like being born, raised in a war zone, or then coming to Turkey as a refugee and not having my human rights, like are the most simple basic things that people take for granted. I didn't have them. I don't, still to this day, I'm not allowed to travel between cities. I have to take a permission from the police. You know, I'm not allowed to work. I'm not allowed to, you know, there's a lot of things that I don't have a bank account. You know, was the first time when I started volunteering, when I felt that I had a value and I had a purpose for the first time of my life. And that's when I realized this is what I wanted to be doing for the rest of my life. I would never think of myself as a privileged person before I started working with LGBT people. And then suddenly I work with people who had to flee from their own families, from their own relatives. And I was like, wait a second, I've never had to worry about my own parents before. So that is something that I consider myself lucky, that to be able to be born in a place where I feel I have safety, at least with my family. And that's something that a lot of people don't have. So I realized that I need to do something for those folks. And I believed in it. I mean, it felt like this is the reason why I'm supposed to live. And I felt like this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. And still, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
The final guest on today's episode is my new friend Hiba. Hiba is the first openly trans filmmaker in Pakistan, and she is now living in London and seeking asylum in the UK. We recorded this conversation live in front of an audience at a pop-up event in London celebrating the release of a short film, Matter, which we talked about in our last episode. Hiba spent some time on the set of the film as an artist, and it's such an honour to hear her story firsthand and to be able to share it with you here.
My name is Hiba Noor, and I'm from Pakistan. Being a trans born in Pakistan, it was a sin. I choose what nature decided for me. But unfortunately, the place I born there was not for me.
Hiba began by sharing the first time in her life that she experienced discrimination when she was just 4 or 5 years old.
In Pakistan, we have a tradition before going to school, the age of 3 or 4 years old, they have sent their children to a mosque for religious educations, to reading holy book and the learn Arabic. So my mom, she decided to send me in the mosque. When I went to the mosque the very first time, I saw two rows, one row for females and children, and one was for male children. And I got confused. Where I have to sit. And then I decided to sit with female row. I sat down. And suddenly I found like a very hard pain in my back. And when I turned around, so they put holy book in a wooden frame. That wooden frame, that teacher, he brutally, in cruel way, he threw at my back. And my shoulder and my back was injured. He said, who gave you the permission to sit down with female row, although you are a male? He started beating me and I went in unconscious. Someone gave news to my mom that this thing has happened, and I was fully with blood. And if I go back, that was the first prosecution of my life.
How old were you?
I think so I was 5 years old.
Wow.
4 or 5 years old. And then my mom and my brother decided me to take off from the mosque.
So you had the support of your mother and your brothers?
Yeah, because as I was very small and I lost my father, that's why I think so my mom's, she extra cares about me. Even though like I was playing with dolls, I was choosing the colors for my dress, the female colors. And ever I go to for shopping with my mom's and I start crying there, no, I don't need these shoes, I need this one. My friend, she wear like this. And even while in my childhood, my mom start wearing me a female clothes because of my wish.
Hibba continued to have a hard time at school and used her creativity as an outlet for how she was feeling.
All classmates, they may complain against me that I talk like a girl, I walk like a girl. They are confused. I'm a sin. They're bullying me. And especially sometimes the parents, they may complain. My own classmates, they won't share the table with me, the school desk. They said, no, maybe we will become like her. First time I realized, like, I'm different than these people. I went in my college toilet and I start crying. And even I beat my face, who I am. In 6th or 7th class, I start writing poetry. And that poetry, what I feel from society, I used to convert in words. When I went to my film degree, same thing has happened. A guy, he said bad thing to me. He said, when you go out, we will kill you. When I go outside the university, he bring like 100 of students from other universities and they have guns and they was beating me. And they throw me out in front of the gate of the university and left me to die. I thought like, I'm a dead soul when my brother come and rescue me.
Hibba always had the acceptance and love of her mother and older brother. She went on to share the story of the heartbreaking death of her brother as a result of his support for her.
He was my lifeline. He accepted me who I am. He never threw me in the street like other trans people are in my country, begging or prostitution or whatever. He accepted me who I am. They said, whatever you are God creation. Their sin was because there was protection of me. And I lost my soul. I lost my brother. They killed my brother. And the receiver called. He said, you see, now we killed your brother and now is your time. I become like a mental person. I was praying to God, please take my soul and put it in my brother. I can't see my brother's small children in front of me. He left a 6-month child in front of me. He was so young, he was just 34 years old. His sin was just because of my protection. Then my mom's, she became in the depression. After 3 months of the death of my brother, she diagnosed a liver cancer. We have in Pakistan just 2 liver transplant hospital. When I bring her there, they denied to treat her because she is the mother of a trans woman. They send me a text and we are watching you in hospital.
Oh my God.
Because they knew that my mom is fighting for her last breaths. Then my sister-in-law said, you have to run from here. Mm-hmm. I run. And after 3 days, I heard that my mom's is gone. They threatened me, if you come on her funeral, on her coffin, you will be killed.
Oh my God.
There was no means left for me to alive. My soulmate, my brother gone, my mom's gone, my protection gone. My sister-in-law, the wife of my brother, she said.
They can't lose you as well.
She said, if you died, your passion gonna die. And if you died, these people gonna be wounded. She make me hide somewhere in Pakistan. She helped me.
After the devastating death of her brother and her mother, Hiba knew that if she stayed, she would be next. With the help of her sister-in-law, she arranged to leave Pakistan by aeroplane, but leaving the country was not without risk, and she continued to receive death threats.
They said, we knew that tomorrow you are flying from Lahore. At the midnight, I discussed with my sister-in-law that they knew that I'm flying from Lahore. She said, no worry, I'm going to book another ticket from Islamabad at midnight and at last point.
At last minute,
you have to be in Islamabad airport. One of my mom's friend, her husband was in airport security force. We begged them and begging for a life is very hard. We was not begging for food or begging for money. I was begging for my life. They helped me to got the way to the plane. Even I was in the plane and I was thinking, I was head down in the plane and I thought like someone is in the plane and someone will come and gonna kill me inside the plane. Oh. Even though I even didn't went to the toilet, I said maybe someone is waiting for me in the toilet and gonna kill me inside the plane. I was covering my face with the blanket and I landed in the London. Till now, like when I arrived here, I bring my dead body in my own cage.
What year did you arrive here, Hiba?
2 years ago in March 2021.
Hiba had arrived to the UK, but with minimal support, no money, being prohibited from working and with severe PTSD, she told us about her life in her home office accommodation in Croydon.
I got a hotel in Croydon. Mm-hmm. For me, it was like a detention center. Like in from my bed, if I put my second step, I can be out from my room. So my room is yes, prison, jail, and like I feel like I'm living in a toilet. Very first day, I have to call to my lawyer. I call to the migrant, tell that I have to go to my lawyer. Aware that how to take train from Croydon to Ilford, mm-hmm, to go my lawyer. And my trauma was that, like, if I take a train, someone gonna be kill me inside the train.
Still having fear and PTSD.
Yeah, yeah. And I was wearing same those clothes which I was wearing for my country. And I run for my country. I didn't bring anything. Mm-hmm. I just run like someone is waking in the morning, having the night dress and just run. Mm. And while it was March, it was raining, same like this weather. Can you imagine I walk from Ilford, from Croydon to Ilford?
What?
It was 37 miles. And when I went to my lawyer, my shoes was not UK shoes. It's totally broken. And my socks and my feet skins were together.
Oh my God.
And when they removed my socks, the blood was down on the floor. I don't have money. I have nothing. Mm. I don't have money. They didn't provide me taxi. And one side, I have a fear. If I take a train, someone gonna kill me. Mm. And secondly, I don't have money. I can't get ticket for train. And thirdly, they are calling, home office calling me. You have to provide these evidence as soon as possible. And there was no way.
I think this is really important to highlight that you've experienced all of this throughout your journey in Pakistan, and then you arrive here to the UK, which I wrote down that you'd done the research into places that had, yeah, you know, the most outstanding human rights in, yeah, the world, and that, yeah, you've read that the UK was high on that list,
yeah,
yet still not being You haven't got your asylum yet, right? You're still applying for your asylum.
Yeah.
You're still waiting.
Yeah, I'm still in waiting list.
Mm-hmm.
Hiba continues to wait for her asylum, and during this time, she is prohibited from working. But a chance encounter through a friend reconnected her with her passion for film.
I really want to talk to you about your art, your creativity, how you use that to express your experience.
I can't work. I was doing drawings at home and taking depression and anxiety and counseling and blah, blah. Meanwhile, home office was keep changing my accommodation. They are just trying to change my cage from one place to another place. And I was with fully trauma. Katie, my friend, her mom and dad, Jane and Tony, they came to me to share my grief. They said, can you stay a night with us so you will feel better? With the manager of the hotel permission, because we asylum seeker can't stay anywhere. And when I was in that house, because I was fully decided in myself, I'm not creative anymore. I met a guy, they have a guest from California. He's a writer. His name is Nat. They introduced me that we have a guest in our house. And they didn't say that he's the writer and thing. Early in the morning in the breakfast, their family was sleeping. I found him something he's writing on breakfast table. And I said, what is writing? Why so early morning? And I just sit down and was keep looking at him. I found like he's a creative person. I have a thirst to talk to him. After finishing his thing, he said, do you want a cup of tea? I said, yeah, of course. He bring a cup of tea. He started talking to me. What's my name? What's my background? And I opened my mouth. I said, previously, back in my life, I was a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh my God, I'm a film writer. I'm writing a film story. He said, oh, wow. I said, wow. He said, tell me about more things. He said, oh my God, it's been 10 years I'm writing things, but I never knew about these things.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Then he fall down in a thought. He said, I have a friend, Mabel, and she's working on some projects. If you don't mind, can I have your Instagram? I said, oh my God. I said, when I came in this country, even though I have 23,000 followers on Instagram and I have big following on Facebook and on my YouTube, I delete all my things, social media things, because of my fear. I don't have any Instagram. He said, okay, give me your WhatsApp. I gave him my WhatsApp. Very next day, a girl named Mabel, she contacted me.
So Mabel was working on the film Matter, which you heard about in the last episode of the podcast. Hiba spent time on the set of Matar drawing and has been using her own story and her art as powerful tools for impact. Hiba finished our conversation with some very powerful words.
Why there is still in this world, humans think that we are superior than each others, although we are one species. We are not animals, we are not birds. We are not plants. We humans, we have to help each other. Although we are different ethnicity, different languages, different tribes, different countries. Although I told you I'm the first trans filmmaker in the Muslim world and from the history of Pakistan. Although I'm the first trans asylum seeker filmmaker in the UK. And I did it. I haven't earned any single penny, but I earn love from society. I don't care about what Rishi Sunak is saying about trans people are asylum seekers. I don't care what Sohila Bahman planning to send us in Rwanda, although trans people, they killed and they don't have rights in Rwanda. I don't care. I need to be on my way. I need to be voice of my community and especially asylum seekers. In the UK and United Kingdom, we are not criminal. We, the way we born, we didn't decide to come to UK and London to enjoy the delicious food and four time weather a day.
You didn't come for the beautiful weather.
Yeah, I don't came for fish and chips. I came for here to live who I am. And for that, I don't need any stamp from the government. We know why we are here.
Wow. Oh, Hiba, it's an honour to have you here. And we're lucky to have you here in the UK. And we're very lucky to share this space with you and to hear your story today. Thank you for sharing with you.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode and what you'd like to hear more of on the show. To get in touch, send me a message on Instagram. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it, rate it, and leave a review. It helps more people to find this podcast, and it helps me to keep bringing you these stories. To support the show, check out our Patreon page. The link is in the show notes. Thank you to Ez Stone for mixing this podcast and Alexander Wells for composing the original score. A final thank you to the MSN Fund and to Skin and Me for making this episode possible. As you guys know, I'm very particular about which brands I would work with on this podcast, but Skin and Me's product is sustainable, vegan, cruelty-free, and has really worked for me. Check out skinandme.com and remember to use the code ASYLUMSPEAKERS, all in caps and all one word, for over 85% off your first month.